Hello and welcome to the Hansan Cast with me, Emmett Lewis, and my glorious co-host, Mikael Kristiansen. Yeah. As you can hear, Emmett isn't exactly here today. That is because he just moved into a gigantic mansion in the middle of nowhere in Ireland. So him and Elise have been very busy moving all the things and basically becoming owners of a fucking castle. So that's basically what's going on with them. I'm sitting in a hotel room in Oslo, playing way too many shows, which I am getting kind of tired of at this moment. I think I've played around 20 shows in 2 weeks, and next week is going to be the same, except we're also playing Sunday, and we're playing, there's just a million shows. So, and there's like double morning shows, basically, is what I'm doing right now. And that does get rather tiring. Even though the show is very light, we made it to be an easy show to play. But it still just does get taxing when you do a bunch of them in a row. And they are very early in the morning. And when you do two in a row, it's particularly like the thing. So I am mega trashed. Now that I'm sitting here in a room alone, and I'm going to talk to you about handstands, I thought to talk a little bit about kind of like the, more kind of the towards the end, or not towards the end, but towards kind of the edge of people's ability levels, like difficult stuff. And I suppose the first thing, because I've been thinking a lot about that and reflecting a lot about because it's not just about the kind of the vertical difficulty curve where things get increasingly hard and you need like more and more training, more and more kind of focus and time and even talent and like specific almost physical proportions to be able to pull off things as starts happening when you go towards like the very very edge of things, as in all sports. I mean, there's going to be a sort of a specific type that starts being kind of better suited for things. But again, this is it's very important to iterate that like that point happens at very different points for different people, and most of all for the most part at the kind of the very elite level. And that's why we see it a lot in sports, and perhaps not as much in circus, because people find their own ways of doing things, and they find their interests and they find their niches. There are no like direct specific criteria that you need to fulfill to be able to just to have anything to do in a competition, for example. While in sports, you do, like, if you cannot fulfill certain criteria, like if you don't run fast enough, well, you can't compete in a certain league, and so on and so on. While with things that are not as rigid, you can basically look into other venues, like other avenues and like other ways of thinking, other ways of developing, and like finding or keeping it interesting with variation as well, which I think is hugely important and very very the further you go into it, the more I think you need it, because like the novelty of doing like the new thing number 500 is it's not as like incredibly cool as doing new thing number 5 is. And I think no one gets around that, and that's why we need some variation, we need some kind of ways of handling these various periods when you're kind of like you're on the edge of something, and then like there's a long grind. And I think that's maybe like a good kind of starting point to talk about like that sort of those edges. And I think like, of course, we've talked about this a lot before as well, me and Emmett, with like you have these kind of like specific moves, such as like, yeah, getting the handstand, getting the 30 seconds, getting the minute, like the milestone of the press, like learning the one arm handstand and so on. And like there are these kind of long stretches of time, particularly for some people, to get across to kind of the next stage where it kind of becomes easy, and you're kind of like for a long time kind of dreaming about how it's going to be when you can always do the press to handstand and all that, and then kind of like through enough effort and time you're able to get it, and then kind of like you're on to, yeah, whatever, the next big stage, or like you're kind of like working towards something new. Some people are even like lucky them being able to be kind of satisfied about their achievements and looking upon it as that, and not necessarily needing to kind of push into like the, like, because there's always another boundary, there's always something more. And I think chasing the dragon there is kind of, it can also be kind of a detrimental path. But yeah, like, I think ultimately, until you give things a real shot with the time and energy and focus you have at hand, you can't really know how far you are able to go. And some people are a bit more kind of edgelords than that, and like really need to push it as far as they can come. But there is this thing that, like, and I remember it very clearly from when I started, and I've seen many people have this kind of thing that, like, I think this is a healthy and natural thing, is that, like, you kind of just see sky as the limit when you're new to things, and you just think, okay, I'm just gonna get that, and then continue to that, and then can't wait to learn this one and that one and so on, and then they don't really know how hard it is, how much effort it is going to take. And like, I think most people probably that listen to this cast and are starting to take it seriously and so on have kind of made fun of the classical person that goes, oh yeah, I want to have a handstand by summer, and they can barely do a push-up, and then summer comes around and they're no closer to the handstand because they just didn't understand how much effort it would take. They would seem very, very dedicated, and like they would speak with great words, but then the actual doing, the actual grind, just became too much of a pain in the ass. Maybe they saw that, like, they weren't that interested. The move is cool, but hey, there's a lot of other things to do. Or they just literally just became too intimidated by the fact that, okay, yeah, this is going to take a long ass time because it's a lot harder than I thought. Or yeah, other, like, there's a myriad of different versions. Like, not going for something after giving it a shot isn't necessarily a failure, because like some people have other things to do with their lives rather than like, okay, I need to lift my ass up in the air from like whatever position it is. So like, there's definitely something to that, that like you can't really know how far you can go. But I think now that I've done it for a very long time, I can kind of like see these sort of these edges that like will be increasingly difficult for certain people to be able to surpass. And this is just like the reason I talk about this too. It's just like, it's important to be realistic to a degree. Like, I'm not going to sit here and like, discourage people from trying to go as far as they can, because I think that's great. I did that myself, and I think that's cool. There's value to that, but not everything is for everyone, and like, you don't need to go for the absolute craziest stuff to have a, like, for the practice to have a value for you. And I think being judgmental in that sense is a complete waste of time. But yeah, like, I think in relation to these things, like, you have a couple of things, and like, as we've talked about before, I think like the ultimate one is the planche, like talent wise, kind of like, if you are built in a fashion that suits the planche, you will have still hard time learning it, but like, it won't be impossibly hard as it will be for some people, or at least it will require the primary driving force of their lives almost to be able to do it for some people. And I know some people who have done that and still not achieved it, because it's just, there's just too much force required for whatever this person can output, because of length and levers and all of that crap. And this is why hand balancing is also great, because you can mitigate these things. You can be flexible, you can be strong, you can be very technical. Like, there's loads of various ways to mitigate the just raw demand of force to be able to do like the thing that we're trying to achieve. And that is good, because that allows for more paths, more body types, more variation of humans that can do it. And I think that is an amazing thing. But yeah, like, into the kind of the hand balancing vocabulary, you will see kind of these kind of types, then you'll see people who have pretty like shoulders that just will never stack as like quote unquote nicely as someone else. Like you will see that there'll be more of a struggle of keeping that kind of like fully stacked, completely effortless line through the shoulder. Some people like need to always maintain some sort of that requires effort, right? And that's something that you will see starts to play in as you go into later stages, where like they might be getting all of kind of the, they might even be getting the entire vocabulary. That's like, I'm of course, but like things such as kind of a figa one arm, for example, starts becoming a lot harder for someone who has like less than optimal shoulder flexibility and or at least cannot compensate that by like great spinal rotation and kind of like a flexible spine, both in arching and in piking. Really good hip flexors and so on. So you will kind of see things like that. You see tendencies early on that will kind of like indicate then, like to a degree, what will be easier or harder for a person. And as I see it, like what these things do very often is that like they make people gravitate a little bit in different directions too. And I think that's actually a good thing. Because like someone sees that they have a knack for something, they learn something faster than something else or so on, and that they might tend to be more interested in that, because like of course you wanna feel that you're skillful with something and like you find at least the things you're good at. And I think that is a healthy and good thing. And I mean, you can work on all sides of your practice depending on what you want, of course, anyway. And then, of course, you have the other side, which is like you see the thing that's hard for you, and for whatever reason, you just have to do it because it was hard for you, and you're just gonna go stand and smash your head against the wall for a very long time into that thing to make it work. I'm definitely one of those people, and I've been fighting a lot for certain things that have been just extremely frustrating and difficult for me to learn, but. For the most part, it's been successful. But then again, I am a person who lives like off of this stuff, which means I can dedicate all the hours of the day to doing it. And if I didn't, then those things would not be possible due to the time that it requires me to be able to do them, whereas someone else might not require the same amount of time. And those things kind of then become more, how to say, taken for granted. This is the wrong word, but like it is easier access then. And you'll see kind of like these various things. I mean, I know a lot of people who, for example, like they find a whole lot of things really easy while you ask them to do a kind of a full flag and they're going to absolutely die. Whereas for me, like a full flag is kind of one of the go-to easier things too, that I'm comfortable with performing and all of that. But doing the things that they are good at, like it's just not going to work for me, or that will require, or like make me require high effort. So like it's kind of like always a game of like trying out and kind of like, I suppose, stay humble in relation to what you can do and where you want to go with things and so on. And you ultimately need to give it a shot to see what is going to happen with it, sort of. But yeah, I do think it's important to remember that like there are, like not everyone is going to be able to go to kind of the highest levels of practice in terms of, yeah, again, only if we're talking only this kind of vertical difficulty scaling. When it comes to that, like it's good to have these, the various ways of mitigating that or finding other things to do and so on. But yeah, we need to give it effort and just see if it's something that we are ultimately interested enough in doing to push on, and knowing that it isn't a failure to not bother doing certain things. Like, I think it's also kind of like a classic sort of self-perpetuating myth in hand balancing, for example, that yeah, you need to do all the things on both sides or else you're a bad hand balancer. No, you're not. You're just someone who doesn't bother doing all things at both sides. Like, does that make you? Like I think it's completely ridiculous to judge someone on that. Like, I mean, I practice more or less the same things on both sides, but I've accepted that, yeah, there's difference, and that's fine. And then you kind of, you go from that, and you just accept the reality of it. And another thing as well, it's just like speaking a little bit back to the various stages I talked about, in relation to how far you're willing to go, how deep into it you kind of envision yourself getting over the years. And I think like most people can get a one-arm handstand if they have the appropriate level of fitness, if they have enough time and dedication to put into it, and they do not injure themselves, then it's an achievable feat, a difficult one, but achievable. And I think for most people who, because you can reasonably consistently develop the two-arm handstand rather linearly with using the right drills and progressions and so on, and developing like the specific physical fitness that a handstand needs, both in relation to flexibility and strength and technique and all that. But it can be done in a reliable manner, learning that skill. And then like there is a cutoff, there is an edge at the one-arm handstand because of not just the difficulty level, but it's also just that long grind. It's boring. It's very, very tedious because you're repeating the same thing a lot all of the time. And I think, as we've spoken about before too, that like the obsessive or a little bit obsessive personality type tends to fit neatly into hand balancing simply because of this. It's just like people that get very absorbed with which is doing the same thing and can like that doesn't annoy them. Those I think have an easier time actually getting it. But of course, I mean, anyone can learn it, but I think at like one point, like to kind of crack it, it does help to get a bit crazy about it. But it's definitely one of these edges where, yeah, you need to really have that dedication, and you need to put in like, or need to be ready to put in like 3 years to get a good one arm. And we're like, some people will just be starting to get their one arm by 3 years. Some people are pretty good at one arms by 3 years, but like, I think that's, it's still kind of like an on average time I like to use, even though like it's not one that you can, like, I don't have a bell curve of how long it takes to make a one arm handstand, but I would assume like around 3 years, 2 to 3 years from someone who has like pretty good basics when they started. But then again, like what's good basics, that can also be defined in different ways, hence like 2 to 3 years. But yeah, I'd say I'd rather use three because like it's better to put a little bit longer one than like disappoint a bunch of people who think they can do it in two. And past that, like that's where things get hard. So like that is kind of that's the edge for very many, is doing the straddle one arm. The straddle one arm does, however, if it's done well, it does lead straight into kind of these shapes of like diamond and tuck and straight and so on, and half straddle, like the straight shapes kind of come directly out of the straddle. At like you need to have developed a good shoulder position in the straddle to have it carry over well, but I've seen it like time and time again with students that like they start getting a pretty good straddle hold with a good shoulder position and like understanding of the body, and they can pretty quickly like do something in the full. It's definitely far from stable, but it exists. Like there's the hand can come off by luck. Diamonds, like it is kind of doable within a few months. Definitely not as good as a straddle, but it's doable within some months of a decent straddle, i.e. 5 to 10 seconds. So those are kind of accessible right off. And then you have the tuck that can be someone's nemesis. Basically, if tuck is your nemesis on two arms, you're going to suffer on one arm for it. And like the straight might be easier for you than the tuck. Whereas if tuck is very easy for you on two arms, and you kind of like neatly slide down into it with and fold nicely from the hips and shoulders stay fully open, then usually like the tuck is a lot easier than the straight. But all of these, they're connected enough so that like you don't need to learn anything new from the point that you're doing a straddle one arm to doing a full one arm. It's just you need to be faster, more precise, and kind of you need to have more endurance, more like strength to be able to do the corrections effectively. But there's not a whole lot of new things. Now, when we move outside of that, like if we start looking at like stuff like, or if we just go through kind of a lot of the one arm vocabulary, if we look at sort of the figa shapes, for example, those start being pretty body specific. And the way people adapt to figa, like the way they kind of move into it, and the way the body kind of creates the similar looking geometry is actually, it comes from a little bit different areas for different bodies and different people. Some are like super flexible in the shoulder, and like the shoulder stays like right by the head all the time, and kind of they just fold, or like they shoot kind of the hips out to the side and kind of like use the kind of spinal rotation and almost kind of arching to get the hips out on the side, and then they just fold from the from the hamstrings and just fold into it like that. You'll usually mostly see very flexible people doing this. I think one of the better examples of it is Joey Martinu. If you look up her, she has like an excellent technique of her figa. She can basically just do a pike two arm and then just twist it over to the side and it just sits there. Then you have people like me who definitely can't do it in that way. I need to really focus on pushing the shoulder a lot higher than normal. I of course use spinal rotation, but I don't have a whole lot of kind of movement, or like my body can't move a lot from the thoracic spine and from the lumbar spine. So I don't have so much spine to put into it, and I need to pull my legs down very hard. Kind of, I need to use my obliques and kind of hip flexors to actively pull the legs down. And I'm sure someone as flexible as Joey, for example, would the legs would go too low if she pulled as hard as I would, because she has less resistance. So I'm sure that like for me, I need to use a lot more strength to hold the figa than she does, because she folds nicely into it. And a position such as figa and like all of these harder moves, what happens is that like there comes more parameters into play, because like there's suddenly more angles that we're dealing with. Like you're moving the hips out to the side, you're folding in at the hips, you're turning the body and so on, and suddenly like the ways that the bodies will express will start having more variation, because there are just more elements into the equation here. And that's why you'll see kind of like, even though the geometry looks the same, like the execution might be slightly different, but I think the kind of the usage of the body, of where you start leveraging your own strengths, whatever they might be, starts becoming more relevant. In flags, you'll see also similar things to this, where side flexibility definitely being like the most significant one in terms of like how it looks, but there's also proportions, and I believe body, like bone structure, significantly impacts the way it looks, and the way it's executed. And like you'll again have people like me who have like, I have like, I guess average, at least for someone with my build, average side flexibility. I can bend it decently, but like my hip bone and my ribs will impact, or not impact, but there is a dead stop somewhere where there is no more movement to be found from the sides. So the top part of my the side that's elongated on top, like, doesn't go any further, because there's nowhere left to go in my lower side, the one that's compressed. From there, I reach almost a 90 degrees to the side, but if I'm going to reach a fully 90 degrees to the side position, I need to move the arm away from my head. And the way that I do this is either by bending the arm or keeping the arm straight and moving it away from just the shoulder. I've tried keeping the arm entirely by my ear, holding onto a pole so that, like, technically the upper body is perfect, and bending as deep as I can and kind of exaggerating it on while holding on to something, and it doesn't go into that range that other people very easily get to. So it's just one of these things where like it will vary significantly, and where someone who is very who's very strong, like I am, like I have a lot of force from the shoulders, like I have a lot of muscle around the shoulder blades, so I do it on leaning into that, and I can do pretty good flags. They're not like the best flags in the world, but they work. Then you have people who have like extreme flexibility, and speaking of bone structure, it like the wider hips and narrower ribs of women do definitely help for getting kind of like a much deeper side bend. It's not like you can see this so significantly with all women that do handstands, but you can see much more often kind of the hips almost folding outside of the ribs, so that like there just seems like there's infinite bending space in the sides. And you'd of course see this a lot more with contortionists than with non-contortionists, where they also kind of lean into the back, kind of bending their spine, so that like the belly button almost goes upwards towards the ceiling as they flag. What's her name? Alona Zhuravel. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Alona Zhuravel or something like that. She's a very good example of this. Like that when she just folds into a flag, it looks kind of as if she goes into a back bend when she does a full flag, and it looks crazy. And her arm is fully straight. Her arm is like just in the same position as on two arms, and it looks almost as if she bends inwards on herself, like the way that like the pelvis just like moves in just a way that like if when I imagine myself doing that, it's just like it is not doable. And yeah, so there are these variations and like these different ways that bodies can move, and therefore you will see people executing them differently. And you'd most of the time see, like for flags, you'll see either very flexible people or people with like a whole lot of strength that tend to favor flags, because those are kind of the two primary ways you can kind of mitigate the flag. And then if you look into kind of for example, the press shapes, which are, or like, yeah, one arm press kind of movements, which are in one sense similar to flags, but since they pike, they are also different mechanically in the shoulder. And like, if you move down with the legs far enough, you end up in the same situation as on two arms, whereas you like the low press on two arms does not relate to the high press on two arms, and it's the same here. The low press on one arm does not relate to the one arm handstand past a certain point. Like, it relates more to air baby and kind of like one arm planche kind of strength because of where you are with the body. And in this too, you will see very like quite distinct people who decide to do it. Either they're sport acro, because that is one of the highly, I mean, the best people in the world at that, those skills are sport acrobats, because they're highly valued and they're trained from young, and you get monstrous results from that. You can mitigate again like a lot of the strength with flexibility. So either you'll see extremely flexible people do it, and they will seemingly have no like muscle and so on visibly, which is one of those classic things that lead to the idea that like, oh yeah, if you don't need strength to do this, or you don't need strength to do that. Yes, you do, and they are very strong as well. It's just that like different builds, different body adaptation. But if you are able to cut the corners by a significant amount, it's a lot better for the body, and it doesn't need to develop as much mass to be able to execute the motion. Then you have people like me who I think I've actually built a significant amount of my muscle just from that move, because I'm a heavy guy and it is like pretty rough for the body to do. I can't get my legs as high up when I'm in a one-arm straddle L-sit, for example. So it needs just a whole lot more kind of like planching force to lean forwards into to get the weight backwards, so that you can twist yourself up. If we look into kind of like what more is there left, of course you have switches and stuff like that. Yeah, like some people really love to get into that, and like very often they'll be kind of specialized on like jumps and stuff like it because they think that's cool. I used to do a whole lot of that as well, but it's also kind of like its own kind of niche area, which is like really difficult, and you need to like spend a whole lot of time on, like, because it doesn't really carry over to, or like one good one arm handstands carry over to it, because you need to be very good at balancing and like catching big wobbles and stuff to do some good switches, and of course like high level of precision at the catching and so on. But it's kind of its own chapter with balancing and with precision and so on, but it's also one of these ones that like, yeah, you need to spend a lot of time. Like all of the things that I'm talking about now, you need a hell of a lot of time, and that's I mean, I guess the thing that I'm talking about here is that you're getting this kind of slowdown in progression as you move through the vocabulary, because things get harder and harder, and you will meet more and more resistance, because like the things that are easy for you will come easy, and the things that are not easy for you will take longer, and you will be left with more of those things the further along you go. And that is pretty frustrating, because like at one point you're just left with like 8 different things that are just mega difficult for you to learn, or just like so plain difficult by nature that like you're just like things aren't really happening seemingly. And I think that is like very important to iterate too towards the end of my mini blah 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 here, is that at a certain level you're ending up at maintenance most of the time, and any kind of like development that you might be doing is like maybe retracing old steps. Like you'll be like, oh hey, I used to train this a lot, I'll play around with that again because that's fun. Like I'm just doing that right now. We're doing like side hops on blocks because I haven't trained those in years. I never got great at them, but I could do them. And now I'm like, okay, I've been a bit bored with like, okay, what can I practice just for fun, like once or twice a week? And I was like, hey, okay, I made myself a board with 3 blocks. I'm just gonna do some side hops. I mean, not to any crazy amount. No real reason to perform it or anything, but just like having a new thing to do. And it's I think it's important to be realistic about those things as well, that like there are certain, like you will come to a level where the things that you practice are no longer things you can take for granted, and I think that starts happening by the level of legs together, one arm, and further from there. Like the things will be so hard that you will quite likely, unless you are like of the most talented or people that learn it from young or so, like it'll be difficult to the point where you always need to maintain it. You always need to, like, it'll always be fresh meat in a sense. And due to that, like you, it's not like it was in the beginning where like you think like you learn your two arms and then you learn your press and you're starting to do one arm preparation drills. Then two arm is so taken for granted. It's so just a casual whatever move, and that is great, but the harder skills don't get there. They just do not. They require too much of both the body and the brain. So you will have to be in a focus zone. You will have to be like, you might not necessarily need to be at your absolute A game to be able to do them at all, but they do require you to be highly focused and have energy and so on to be able to execute, or you just have to drop it. So I think that is like some important things to think about, that like you will reach this level at whatever time where things have a significant slowdown, and I think like that will happen for at different stages for different people. But like even for those who spend a whole hell of a lot of time on this, it will start happening. And I think particularly after you get the one arm handstand is where things get mega slow, and some people have like quite explosive progress even through that, and like then they start going towards like real end game level stuff, and it starts also just getting mega slow, or it gets to the point where you're just like like constantly grinding the same thing, because like it's never gonna be easy. And to like basically the way I look upon a couple of those things is just like, there's a couple of things that like, okay, I can do them, but I'll never own them. I'll rent them. Or I am renting them, essentially speaking, because like, yeah, I can't expect to have them forever. That actually comes from my friend Mauricio Jara, Mau Yarai, that you might know from Instagram or other places. He's the one that said that he didn't feel that he owned some of the really hard skills. He was just renting them, and I definitely agree on that. It's that feeling. You have them for a time, and in the end, like, that's how it is with everything too. Like, there is a day you will no longer do the things, and it's good to reflect over that sometimes, I think. Only other thing to remember really is that gravity always wins. This has been the solo ramble about different things, and I hope you took something away from it.
The Handstand Cast is brought to you by Handstand Factory and is produced by Motion Impulse. Thanks for tuning in. You can find a full transcript of each episode along with the show notes and any relevant references on handstandfactory.com/podcast. Thanks to Isaac for editing and Jordan for transcriptions. Music by Daniel Horwath. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee on buymeacoffee.com or consider starting one of our Handstand Factory online programs. Links are in the show notes.